From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Boston earlier this year during the Boston Marathon. A woman named Catherine Switzer crossed the finish line with an adoring crowd supporting her. She's 70 years old, and she has a long relationship with the Boston Marathon. In 1967, Catherine became the first woman to officially enter the race and complete it. And on that day, 50 years ago, one of the race organizers tried to forcibly remove her from the course. A photograph of that moment became iconic, and to this day, you might see women running races with a number 261. Maybe it's tattooed on their arm or their ankle. Well, that was Catherine's bib number in the 1967 marathon. Here's how Time magazine describes her work in a July article this year. Quote, when Catherine Switzer crossed the finish line of the Boston Marathon in 1967, it was remarkable because she was a woman, the first to run the race as an official entrant. When she crossed the same finish line 50 years later, it was remarkable because she was 70. Switzer, who built a career on challenging gender stereotypes in sports, said she is now focused on tackling the frontier of aging, end quote. Well, tonight, Switzer is back in Western New York, and not because she's here for the Women's Hall of Fame, but this time, she's here as a guest at the Baden Street Settlement's annual gala. It's an event to benefit their Mature Adult Resource Center, and we've got a lot to talk about this hour. Catherine Switzer, it is great to have you in studio. Welcome here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan. It's wonderful to be back in upstate New York. A lot of my running history is from here.
Yeah, there are a lot of local connections, which I knew about, some I did not, so I'm excited to talk about that. I'll say hello to the other guests in studio. Gladys Jordan Holloman is one of my favorite human beings. She is Director for Emergency and Family Assistance Efforts at Baden Street Settlement. She's Supervising Coordinator for Baden Street's Mature Adult Resource Center. Gladys, it's great to have you here.
I'm so happy to be back here.
Well, it's great to have someone like Gladys with her spirit. Ron Thomas is here. Ron's the Executive Director of the Baden Street Settlement, which, by the way, if you're hearing us say Baden Street, Baden Street, Baden Street, and you're still not exactly sure, Ron, the short definition of what the Baden Street Settlement is?
Well, we are one of the oldest settlement houses here in the city of Rochester. There were six settlement houses in the city. Baden, as I said, is one of the oldest ones. Our focus has always been on lifting the community in which we reside, and that is the northeast section of Rochester. We've been focused on that community for 116 years, and our mission is to eliminate the causes of poverty, to raise the self-sufficiency capabilities of those people who live in that community, as well as provide respite opportunities, recreational opportunities, and social opportunities that will in fact enhance the community itself, as I said, raise it.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you for being here, Ron. It's great to have you. And Ted Hardy is here. Ron, how long have you known Ted? Does everybody know Ted there?
I've known Mr. Hardy for, 40 years or so. He's been a fixture here in Rochester and has been an integral part of our organization for all of those years that I've known him.
Well, we're talking about aging, and Ted is a member of Baden Street's Mature Adult Resource Center. He's an honorary member of the Baden Street Board of Directors. And your first visit to Baden Street, Ted, was, you were how old?
18, in 1956.
1950? I wasn't going to date you. So, 18 years old in 1956. What do you remember about going to Baden Street in 1956?
Well, they had all these things to keep us off the street and, basketball and activities there, and more or less the camaraderie to be with the people that you knew in the community, and it was a safe environment there.
So you're there as a young man.
As a young man.
And now you're there as a less young man.
Yes.
And I know you appreciate the Mature Adult Resource Center, so we're going to hear Ted's story as we go throughout the hour, too, because he's another smiling example of the work that goes on at Baden. But Catherine, you're here as a part of their annual gala, and we're going to talk about, aging well now. At age 70, you run a marathon. You're going to keep running marathons?
I am. I think it maybe was sort of a post-runner hypoxia or a delusion after the Boston Marathon that it went so well and joyously, but I decided I was in shape. I might as well run New York, so I'm running the New York City Marathon in 2 weeks.
2 weeks from now?
Yes.
New York City Marathon.
Crazy. I know, it's crazy. I actually won the New York City Marathon, as you said, in 1974, but it was entirely in Central Park in those days. And after that, I began a television career, and so I've been on the back of a motorcycle through the streets of New York commentating the race for 28 years, but I have never run through the streets of New York. So I said, hey, If not now, when? So I'm going to go do it. And they're, if you can imagine, they're wiring me for my vital signs. So at 70, they're very interested in what that heart rate and skin temperature is going to be like during the race.
We're going to talk about your training regimen because Time Magazine reports that, you know, it's changed a bit, you know, whether it's running every day or every other now. And we'll talk about that in a second. But the reason she's here, Ron, just tell us briefly what's coming up tonight. It's the annual gala. And what do you want people to know about that?
Well, it's our annual gala. The funds that will be raised through this gala will be used to support our the Mark Center at Baton. That's an important program for us. As Ted and Gladys will allude to later, that program is vital to keeping seniors, one, active, two, engaged with their fellow peers, so that they can enjoy the later stages of life, if you will. We want to make sure they're engaged in health activities, activities so that they can enjoy a nutritious meal every day, activities that will keep them engaged so that their social connections to each other and to this community is enhanced and improved. That program has operated. At the beginning, it started out as a lunch program. A couple of days ago, I was just looking at some old photographs of Mrs. Gant, Mrs. Gertrude Talley, Mrs. Best, when they were sitting down in the senior center and simply doing a lunch program. Thanks to the efforts of Annie Miller and Gladys Holloman, and I'll just say we just lost Mrs. Miller in the last couple of weeks, and we're going to miss her so much. But through their efforts, we've grown to become a Mark Center, and we are so proud of that achievement that both Gladys and Annie has helped us do over the last 40 years or so. Gladys, 42. I think Annie was like 45 or 46, 44. And so we are very, very proud to have to be able to work with the County of Monroe, the Office for the Aging, as well as with other people in the community to offer programs for our seniors that may not have access to the kinds of uplifting, supportive activities that they can, as I've said, make their life a better life in their later years.
So tonight, 7 p.m. at the Holiday Inn downtown, it's Baton Street Settlement's annual gala. Catherine Switzer will be there. Proceeds benefit the Mature Adult Resource Center. For tickets, you can call 585-445-6731 or just jump online, Baden Street, B-A-D-E-N, badenstreet.org for that event tonight. Let me ask Gladys, by the way, you know, I wanted to, if you could, having been there for, you said, more than 40 years, Gladys, what are some of the kinds of great stories that you see come out of the Mature Adult Resource Center?
Oh, my goodness. They're always so excited with the trips that they take. Our county executive has a ball each holiday season, and they just love to dress, to go out to the ball. I mean, just the activities and the camaraderie in the center itself, it's just joyous to go and hear them talk about, oh, I was here when I was this old, as Mr. Hardy said, 19. Some of them grew up from a baby to whatever age they are now. And they've always lived around Baton Street. So they have many, many stories to share. And they just seem to be so excited with the activities that take place. That gives my heart joy.
It's like a big family.
It's like a big family. Sure. They all have known each other for years.
That's wonderful stuff. Well, one of the reasons they wanted Catherine Switzer is exactly what Catherine was just describing. At the age of 70, running a marathon, getting ready to run the New York City Marathon in a couple of weeks here. And you know her not only for her iconic that image and running the Boston Marathon, but as you said, television commentating, et cetera. So I did not know that your 1974 New York City Marathon win was all in Central Park, right?
Yeah, actually harder than the course now because Central Park is really, really hilly. But, I mean, that's not the point. The point is actually doing it for the first time through the streets and sharing that joy. You know, it's amazing. You know, there were so many of us in the early days that helped create the sport. And now the sport of marathon running has really transformed our major cities. I mean, where else do you see 50,000 people marching through a street that's not at war? And it's a totally peacetime holy good movement of running and life-giving spirit. Actually, the crime rate in New York City is at its lowest on Marathon Day. Isn't that amazing? Amazing.
Wow, that is a great stat
to
have.
But what I'm going to be talking about tonight, and by the way, this is going to be a really fun gala. I'm really looking forward to this. I mean, I got my party dress on, and Havana Nights is going to be a lot of fun. One of the things I always talk about people's empowerment. Not just women's, but especially women, of course, because that's my field. But men and women, and in an activity that we grew up in that is, in a way, gender-free and totally egalitarian, running. They're out there to motivate each other. And we're finding that it's never too late to become an athlete. My frontier about aging is that people used to talk about women the same way they're talking about old people now. In other words, they say, always telling old people, you better slow down, you better not do that, you better not take a chance, you might hurt yourself, right? I'm looking at you guys, you're laughing. They say, oh, you're going to get a heart attack if you do that. Well, actually, we know now the more you do, the more you can do. And the sense of aging, see, these are all things they used to tell women. You know, we were too weak and too fragile. And you might hurt yourself. And we're finding that that at any age, the more you can take part in a vigorous activity, it's like money in the bank. In the end, you actually have a longer life, a more optimistic life, a more directed life. And you pass that on to your own family and to other generations and your communities, which you guys are doing at Baden Street, which is so important. But also, I'm talking about empowerment. And sometimes the simple act of putting one foot in front of the other transforms people and makes them feel empowered and can realize they can do much more with their own lives than they ever believed possible. So socially, this is extremely important because sometimes people believe they can't do anything and that they're worthless. So if you just give them an opportunity to do something that simple, it can change their lives. Certainly, we've seen that in running. In my lifetime, I've gone from a woman being practically thrown out of the Boston Marathon because I was a female, to now there are more women runners in this country than men. 58% of all the runners are women. And they're not running to be elite athletes. They're not running to lose 5 pounds. They're doing it because it makes them feel empowered. And it really has transformed them in other areas of their lives, jobs, education, family care, everything.
When you talk about the most egalitarian sport, I mean, I certainly understand that. And yes, there was an idea for a long time that women were too frail for a lot of things, and science has proven how ridiculous all of that is. But I'm curious to know, 50 years ago, do you think they were still trying to hold you out of that marathon because they were worried that you were too frail because you're a woman, or was it just abject sexism? What was the reason by 1967?
I really hate to think it was abject sexism, but of course it was the eve of the women's liberation movement, and it was a contentious movement at the time. People felt women shouldn't go into areas that were male domains. It was inappropriate. And it was certainly inappropriate for a woman to look like she was working really hard and struggling and sweating because that was not, quote unquote, feminine, which was what dictated women so much for thousands of years. And therefore, women weren't participating in sports because they didn't want to appear masculine or to lose their femininity or even their childbearing capability, which is something that they kept saying would happen to us. You know, if you run hard, you're not going to be able to have children. Well, it's hilarious when you look at the Saudis recently finally giving women the right to drive a car. One imam said they might hurt their ovaries if they learned to drive. If they drove a vehicle. I mean, the old myth is so prevalent. And there are myths that surround aging as well, and that we're having to overcome those. And the best way of overcoming them is to simply get out and do it. But back in 67, I think people just couldn't believe a woman could do something arduous because the marathon had this mystique of being so dangerous and difficult, like mountain climbing. And of course, the opposite is the case, is that women don't have the speed and power of men, but we have more endurance and stamina. So, you know, give us the English Channel, give us a marathon, give us a 6-day race, and we're going to win.
Give you from swimming from Cuba to Florida.
I mean, yeah, Diane and I, it was incredible. Yeah, at an older age, too.
And so I'm not going to get hung up on 1967 the whole hour, but do remind our listeners, you know, the circumstances when you register, because you're the first woman to actually register as a participant and do the race. And what was still, it's still wild to me to see that photograph of what happened on the course. So going into that, did you expect that to happen? Did you expect them to literally try to run you off there?
Hey, listen, I was a 20-year-old student at Syracuse University, and I was running the race because I wanted to run my first marathon. And I proved to my coach in practice. He himself didn't believe a woman could do it. And he said, if you prove to me in practice that you can do it, I'll take you there. And he insisted I officially sign up because he said Boston was a serious race. I mean, I was a card-carrying member of the Amateur Athletic Union, but I thought the Boston Marathon was some kind of open thing where everybody just came and ran, and only the guys up front who are elite were taken seriously, which is pretty much the case. But and he said, no, you have to sign up for it. So I signed my name with my initials, KV Switzer. My dad misspelled Catherine on my birth certificate, and I grew up with it always being misspelled. So at 12, when I was an aspiring writer and wanted to be J.D. Salinger and T.S. Eliot, I started signing my name KV Switzer. And I was a student, as they say, of journalism. So I was wanting to be a sports writer at Syracuse. And so I signed everything KV Switzer, and I signed the entry form to Boston. It wasn't designed to defraud them. But I wasn't going to Boston with a megaphone saying, I'm a girl, look at me. I just wanted to put my head down with my team and run the race.
But if you had written Catherine Switzer on that application, maybe, what would have happened?
Maybe things would have been changed. Maybe it would have been overlooked. But I don't think so. I think they probably would have disqualified my entry. Also, I'll tell you another thing. I had on a very cute shorts and top. And it was snowing and sleeting that morning. And so we had on heavy gray sweats. And everybody looked like refugees out there. And the officials couldn't tell me from a distance from one of the guys. And if it had been a warm day, maybe history would have been changed.
But they still tried to get you off the course.
Only the officials. The men loved it. Men really were encouraging to me. And that's an important point to make. Another important point to make is that other women had run distances, and even in some marathons, and even at Boston, but never officially. And so they were kind of ignored and dismissed. And my coach said, you have to, if you're serious about running, you have to officially enter the race. So the men were wonderful, said, I wish my wife would run, I wish my girlfriend would run. And it was only the race director, when he saw me in his male-only race, which he said was a male-only race, although it was never in the rules and never on the entry form, jumped off the press truck in anger, attacked me and tried to throw me out of the race, pull off my bib numbers, cursed at me and said, get out of my race and give me those numbers. And it happened in front of the press truck. So that's another thing. Maybe we wouldn't be here today if that photograph hadn't gone around the world. It is a very galvanizing photograph. It's now one of the greatest photos in the women's rights movement because the official is a very angry man.
Well, and did you, at any moment when that was happening, did you think, I can't be out here? Or even, did that make you determined?
When he was attacking me, there was a split second where I thought perhaps I was disrupting a really famous, important race. And then I got angry and realized, hey, I've trained for this. He's only doing this because I'm a girl, and I've got to finish this race. Because the women in the women's liberation movement were hugely criticized for barging into places where they were not allowed to go. And then they said, well, they can't do it anyway. They're demanding all these things, and then they can't fulfill them. I said, if I don't finish this race, they're going to say the same thing about women in running. So I often say I started the Boston Marathon as a girl and finished the Boston Marathon as a grown woman because I had to make an extremely difficult decision. And at 20, I made that decision to finish the race. No matter what, I was going to finish the race. On my hands and my knees, if I had to, I was going to finish the race.
And maybe this question's only on my mind because just last night I went to Jiva to see the new show, The Agitators, which explores the life and friendship of Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass, which is we're going to talk about in the program in a couple of weeks, and it's really worth seeing. But, you know, you can't know at the time, with rare occasions, that you're going to be, all of a sudden you're thrust into a rights movement. Susan Anthony, later Susan B. Anthony, as the play sort of explores, understood just how firmly she felt about things. Did you think, I'm going to this race, but I may all of a sudden end up sort of a symbol or some kind of idea of women's empowerment?
I didn't think I was going to end up as a symbol. I thought I was going to go to jail or something. I thought maybe I'd done something illegal. And I turned to my coach and I said, listen, if we're going to get arrested, I'm resisting arrest. And because we didn't know. And of course, as I said, these rules weren't written anywhere. They were custom. And when I did finish the race, I was met with irascible journalists who were saying this is a joke, correct? And I'm saying, a marathon's not a joke. and they said, you know, are you going to come back? And I said, of course, I'm going to always come back. Then one of them said, and this is good for our aging thing, one of them said, you're not going to be running again. You just ran this once, right? And I said, you know, someday you're going to see a little old lady of 80, and you're going to read about her falling dead in Central Park after running. And I said, that's going to be me. I'm going to run all my life. And of course, now I'm dialing back the 80.
Make it like
195.
110. 110. Because listen to this. So not only does Catherine complete it, the 1967 marathon, just did the 2017 marathon. What were your two times? 1967.
Yeah, in 1967 it was 4:20, and in 50 years later it was a 4:44. So only 24 minutes difference. And of course, in this year I stopped 13 times because I was doing interviews all along the course. So you know, probably if I'd run hard without stopping, it would have been under that.
But how much did you get slowed down by literally getting attacked on the course in 1967?
Well, that's true, too.
It's true.
People pilloried me and said, oh, that's only a 4-hour, 20-minute marathon. I said, well, it's not bad with a gorilla on your back.
Only 4:20. Yeah. I mean, unbelievable. 4:44 is fabulous at any age. Amazing, amazing stuff. You won it in 1974 in New York City. At what time, by the way?
New York City wasn't so great. It was a 3:07, but I went...
Wasn't so great.
No. It was 100 degrees. But I came back to Boston in 75 and ran a 2:51, which was world rank. And that's another aging story. Honestly, the body always wants to get better. The body always wants to be an athlete. We underestimate our capabilities so hugely. I'm not talented. I just work really hard. And really, anybody can get better by simply putting one foot in front of the other.
Think about those times, because there is this idea as we get older, even when I say older, when you turn 30, you wish you were 20. When you turn 40, you wish you were 30. And you look back and say, well, I won't have the energy as I did in my late teens or early 20s. You're running your best times well after.
Can I tell you, I think 70 is my best decade. I'm looking at you guys around the room. I feel fabulous, and I'm full of gratitude also. I mean, bad things can happen to anybody. I mean, I just lost my sister-in-law last Friday, and she's only 59. Anything can happen. But the thing is to make the most of our health, give it a chance to bloom, and realize that at any age, you can do much more than you ever realized.
When Time Magazine reported on Catherine running the Boston Marathon this year at the age of 70, they had a few things to say about what has changed in your training, in your regimen, what you've adjusted, sometimes reluctantly maybe, but we'll talk about that after our only break of the hour. We're going to talk about how Catherine approaches what she does. Again, she's running the marathon two weeks in New York City.
Oh my God, don't tell me.
So we'll talk about training, and we'll talk about nutrition, activity, how Catherine views it, how Baden Street views it with their program there. We're going to get Ted's story. Can't wait to talk to you, because you may not be running a marathon, but Ted's got a lot of people smiling too. So a lot to talk about here. Well, let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll come right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on the next Connections, how can districts work together to create more diverse schools? And how can racial and socioeconomic diversity improve academic success and student health? We'll talk about the research and what's on the horizon in our community and New York State. Then in our second hour, Reverend Barry Lynn is the Executive Director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. He joins us in studio talking about his perspective in the Trump era. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Catherine Switzer, author, activist, athlete, commentator, the first woman to officially register and run and complete the Boston Marathon, and still running marathons in her 70s today. She is in Rochester because the team from Baden Street Settlement brought her in for their annual gala. That is tonight at 7 o'clock at the Holiday Inn downtown, and you can still attend. Jump on badenstreet.org. It's BADEN. Ron Thomas is executive director. He's here. Gladys Jordan Holloman is director of emergency and family assistance efforts at Baden Street, and she is the supervising coordinator for their Mature Adult Resource Center. She's here. Ted Hardy is here. He's a member of Baden's Mature Adult Resource Center and an honorary member of the Baden Street Board of Directors. We're going to get Ted's story here coming up in just a second. As we've been talking to Catherine Switzer, I'm curious to know how you feel when you see women's, whether it's a tattoo or their own bib number or their own homage to 261. What's that like for you?
You know, I got to tell you, this is really very touching and emotional for me, because 261 was my bib number in the Boston Marathon, the one the official tried to rip off of me. And suddenly it became a cult number, meaning fearless in the face of adversity. From that, we have created a nonprofit, a 501c3, because we know that running works for women. It's transformational. And we're spreading the fearless message around the world through a series of community clubs. Baden Street works because it's a community-based organization. You direct touch people. That's what 261 Fearless is doing around the world with a series of community clubs and powerful communication. We have a powerful website, you know, 261fearless.org. Women around the world are communicating to each other through that. It's a movement and a nonprofit. But how amazing it was to have 125 unbelievable women raising money and running the Boston Marathon with me for that 50th anniversary and helped really launch the foundation globally. It was fantastic.
And Catherine, not only in the Women's Hall of Fame for what happened in 1967, but really for what has happened in all of these subsequent years, the way she's inspired women and now the work that she's doing when it comes to aging and fitness. So as a member of the Women's Hall of Fame, you know, yeah, you've been in Western New York, but you mentioned you went to Syracuse, and you've got some Rochester connections here.
Oh, you know, first of all, the training we used to do up here in upstate New York, nobody would believe, except people who live here, what the weather conditions are like. It is very, very tough to get out there in the snow and the sleet and the sub-zero temperatures, but it makes you tough. And after the Boston incident, my coach and I came back to Syracuse and said, okay, we're going to form the Syracuse Track Club, which is now the Syracuse Chargers, one of the biggest upstate clubs there is. The Rochester Roadrunners created the Rochester Track Club, the Utica team, the same thing. And we all came to each other's events, and we ran all these amazing events up here. So, yeah, I'm actually now on the board of the Falk School of Sports Management at Syracuse University. I keep my ties to Syracuse, and I'll never ever forget the hard training that I did up here served me well for the rest of my life.
Time Magazine says that you told them it kills me of forcing you, your regimen kind of forcing you to stop running so frequently, but a trainer recommended you spend more time balancing the stress of running with a day of recovery, so not every day anymore.
I know, it's amazing. I used to do two workouts a day. And how I did that going to graduate school and putting the husband through graduate school and working a full-time job, I don't know. But I'd worked 13 workouts a week. Now it's every other day. And it's working. What can I tell you? I'm not training to be fast. I'm training for completion.
So when it comes to what you eat and how you work out, you know, I know you told Time, you do not tell people, especially in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, hey, you can go run a marathon, because that seems like a mountain to climb that's too high, right?
Absolutely. I've just told Gladys while we have that break. I said, Gladys, I'm getting you a pair of sneakers. You're going to put them by the door, and you're going to put them out and go out for a 10-minute walk every day. Honestly, people look at a marathon, they say it's impossible. Well, everything is impossible if you don't start someplace. So a 10-minute walk every day becomes a 12-minute walk. The next week becomes a 15-minute walk. Get a dog, go out with a friend, get a buddy. The American Heart Association has said that beginning an activity program that raises your heart rate is more powerful than quitting smoking in terms of preventing heart disease. So and it's not a marathon, it's a 30-minute walk every day, and that will reduce 45% of the rates of cardiovascular disease. These figures are so powerful that we're crazy not to do something that is so fun and enjoyable for ourselves.
You do other stuff too? Do you do planks and wall squats?
Oh, I hate it. I do. I got to work on the core. I always thought I had a core, really good core, but I lost it someplace around here, you know. But and it's hard. You got to do those planks and those wall squats. It's hard.
So as someone who did 13 workouts a week for a while, and now you're still working out every other day in your 70s, do you build time into the schedule? And especially when you were busy before, as you said, your husband in graduate school, you're doing all of these things, 13 workouts a week. Is it almost... does it have to be on the schedule? Or, you know, because I think of myself, I think, well, tomorrow morning I'm going to wake up and I'm going to go to the gym. Then you go, well, I'm a little tired, or I stayed up late working or whatever. And then you find a reason not to go. Do you build a schedule?
No, I don't, because okay. I'm traveling all the time. I've been on a speaking tour for instance, I actually haven't been in a bed for the last 3 days because I've been red eyeing back and forth across the country. That's crazy. I know it's crazy, but it's an important opportunity. And so I run every other day still. That is the core part of this. And if I'm tired, I don't do my planks. What can I tell you? I try not to wince out of them, but I do sometimes. And I'm not as prepared probably for New York as I was for Boston, but I'll be more prepared for another one another time. So I don't beat myself up over it.
Sure. What about when you were doing 13 workouts a week, though? How did you fit those in?
I was a little obsessive. I would get up at 5 in the morning and run in the dark, and then I would go to work, and then I would come home. I would work running again in the dark, and then I would do night classes for my graduate degree. Mm-hmm. And then on Sundays was always a marathon distance. It was amazing.
So for people, and there are a lot, and I understand, and I've been there myself, who say, I just don't have time to work out. You say what?
I say, well, you can do it if you're hungry enough. I'm saying maybe it's not that important, but if you really want it, you'll get it. Maybe you figure out things to do with the kids. The house has to be messy, and laundry piles up. Maybe those things aren't important. But the hardest one is giving up sleep. That is always the hardest one.
So you can see why Ron Thomas and Baden Street wanted to bring Catherine in there. How are you feeling, Ron? You ready for tonight?
Well, we are ready for tonight, but I would be remiss if I didn't say that there were two Syracuse alums on our board of directors. Kelly Raymore and Katie Storrs both were very instrumental in choosing who our speaker was going to be for tonight. And the tenacity. Catherine's talking about running, but you can take that lesson to any part of your life. I mean, there are many people in our community who are facing many challenges as a result of poverty, as a result of trauma. Those we can overcome. You can overcome if you have the same kind of tenacity, the same kind of commitment to change, the same kind of commitment to improve. And we wanted our community to hear that lesson. And then we could not have chosen a better person to bring that lesson to this community and to us.
Yeah. 7 p.m. tonight for their annual gala at the Holiday Inn downtown, badenstreet.org, for registering and tickets now. Ted Hardy is a member of the Mature Adult Resource Center at Baden Street. And, Ted, I'm tired just listening to Catherine. How do you feel?
Sorry.
Oh, man. I'm just looking at her saying, that's going to be all of us.
So, Ted, let's go back here. So, again, you start going to Baden Street when you're 18 years old, but throughout the years, what has Baden Street meant to you?
Well, it was in the community, and we would look mostly when I'd start working at the Association for the Blind, and it was a choice of whether I was going to donate money to the Association for the Blind where I worked or at Baden Street. I said, I got to do the both because it meant so much to me. And to tell you a little more about it, as I got older, my mother got older, and guess what? My mother went to Baden Street to the Mark Center. And she said, I like going over there. She said, but I'd like to know when I'm going to get paid. I said,
he had said the Mark Center, by the way, M-A-R-C, Mature Mark, Adult yeah. Resource Center.
Yeah.
They call the Mark. In 1995, you retired, right? So you're somebody who all the way back in 1956, you knew Baden Street as an 18-year-old. You retire in 1995, and you kind of got reintroduced as well to Baden Street yourself?
2006. I was looking.
Oh, 2006.
Yeah. They was having some kind of activity. It was either on television or on the radio. Well, and there were these people. They were shooting pool, and it was having such a great time. And I said, that's Baden Street. I said, I think I'll give it a shot. And I go over there, and the lady said, yeah, you have to be 60 to join the Mark Center. And I said, well, yeah, I like shooting pool. I like playing cards. I like to go on trips. And there's one thing I like to tell you. We got some girls over there. They walk every day because where Baden Street is located, we got a safe environment there. They walk around from down by Baden Street to Kelly, over to Hudson, to Upper Fall, and back around to Joseph. And it takes about 35, 40 minutes. They do that every day. And you know, and they won't miss it, and we'll be concerned about it. But it's that camaraderie that we have. And in the meantime, we got some of the best card players in the city. You know, sometimes the police department come over and we always challenge them. They come and play us a game, and they have a couple of times.
Don't get anybody in any trouble right now. You said the police show up. I said, where is this story going?
No, they play cards.
That's good. Like, that's yeah. good. That's good. And what would happen in your life for you and your family, Ted, if Baden Street wasn't there with the Mark Center?
oh God, that would pick a void. I look forward to Main Street every day, and everybody will tell you. I do not look forward to the weekend because that's Saturday and Sunday. I won't be over at the Center to see my friends and all. And on Mondays, we have some little spiritual guidance thing that we like to participate in. It's supposed to be a 30-minute thing, but we always just begging our coordinator to let us go a little longer. You just don't realize how much we enjoy being with each other. And we always, if someone is missing, is one of the ones that's not there, we're calling on the phone, what's wrong? Well, I just didn't feel good today. Well, you better get in here tomorrow. It's just that type of thing.
People know that they're loved, that they're cared for.
Yeah, oh yeah, we're very close. It's like one big family there.
Well, Gladys, how many people are served by the Mark Center at Baden Street?
We have a registration of 70. We have an attendance of approximately 20 to 30 people on a daily basis, Monday through Friday. And they come in sometime before the coordinator is there. Someone is standing at the door waiting to come in.
Yep.
And they're promised a hot lunch, so they know they're going to have a nutritious lunch. It's through the County of Rochester. They're ready for cards. They're ready for pool. They do go shopping, so they go out on Thursdays.
Mm-hmm.
They shop on Wednesdays. We have the curbside market come in,
mm-hmm.
so they're able to shop at the curbside market, which saves monies for them.
Mm-hmm.
They can use their food stamps, cash, whatever. We do have a nutritionist that come in and share with the seniors on how to eat better, to make sure they choose some healthy foods. We have other speakers come in, and as I said early on, the county executive sponsors two events for them. They look forward to it. We do special events, and one thing I'm going to share is that our seniors like to dance. So when the music come on, the seniors jump up.
I love that.
They enjoy dancing.
And can they move it?
Oh, they put me to shame. And those girls that Mr. Hardy is talking about, I think their age from about 75 till about 83. I think the oldest one is 83. And they go walking. We are concerned about them, but they feel comfortable in doing the walk. Mr. Hardy is a walker.
Yep.
Actually, he takes the bus to Baden on a daily basis. So he has to go from one side of the city to the other to get into the center. And as you heard, he won't miss it. We're always telling him when the weather is bad, Mr. Hardy, stay home. He's there. So it's just that camaraderie that the seniors enjoy together.
The voice you're hearing of Gladys Jordan Holloman, I first met Gladys back when we were talking about holiday gifts and getting Christmas gifts for families, for kids, for people who need a little help. And Gladys does this work for hundreds of families every Christmas, right?
Yes.
And what you see in people like Gladys is a genuine love. And I'm not overstating. I mean, genuine love for people. She gets to know these families. And I look at the Mark Center, which is kind of a new idea to me with Baden Street, not a surprise that you're doing this, in the same kind of vein that people, it's important for people of all ages, but particularly people who are getting older and maybe the potential for isolation can happen, that they first and foremost feel they have a sense of community and people who love them, people who care about them. Do you see that need, Gladys?
Yes. That's why we provide transportation to our seniors. We just can't provide transportation to Mr. Hardy because of where he lives.
He's committed.
He's very committed. But that's a part of it. We don't want our seniors to be isolated. We try to reach out on a weekly basis to seniors that's not a part of the program to invite them to come in. We want them to be able to come in and share in a safe atmosphere, be free. We don't want them to feel like you come, you have to just be to yourself. No, come, enjoy the conversations that's going on. So we do a mailing every week to seniors that's not a part. We have a listing of seniors in the area and the complexes that has seniors. So we try to get them out. They can, you know, do their shopping. We offer so many things to them that they can be a part of the city and enjoy it. You don't have to feel like there's no place for you. We want you to know there is a place. And they share in our activities department, also bring young children over sometime to motivate them. They come in and they do a little skit, they'll do a little play. They used to bake and bring things over to the seniors. So that's another part of it.
And so on the one side, you've got a place for them to feel love and feel community. And then the other is maybe a way to keep moving a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because when we stop moving, it is a lot harder to restart moving the older we get. How much do you see that as part of what has happened at the Mark Center?
Well, we have some seniors that refuse to come out of their domain only because they're not feeling safe. So we really try to enhance that safe atmosphere to them. Come out, be a part of, we'll pick you up. Know that you're right here. Yes, when they stop being a part of something, when they're isolated, I think they deteriorate much faster.
Mm. You got to keep moving. And Catherine, for you now, and at the age of 70, how much do you feel that yourself? I mean, how much change have you felt? I mean, you're still running actual marathons, but how much change have you felt, and how much do you think about the importance of whether it's not slowing down or at least not stopping at any point?
I find it critically, critically important in my life and my well-being. Not only does movement and running in particular relieve stress, it also creates creativity. You know, I mean, I get a lot of my best ideas from them. So I find it my kind of magic elixir. The reality is, though, that people who exercise regularly actually have a longer and more optimistic life, better outlook. I love to say great things are ahead for you if your health is ready for them. And active aging is really the way to go because it creates that sense of optimism and positive outlook, as well as genuinely promotes good health.
Have doctors talked to you about running versus other? I mean, some doctors are a little hesitant because of the pounding on the joints, but, you know, you've been running for a long time. Do you get any complaints about that?
No. You know, these people always say, you know, you're going to hurt your knees. Of course, that's a myth. Actually, the more you exercise, the better, because a body, when you stress a body, it regenerates stronger. We know that with muscle training and bone, certainly for older people, osteoporosis and falls are an issue. Muscles are very, very important. A wonderful gerontologist named Walter Bortz said the most important organ in our body is not our brains, but our legs. Because if you can keep moving, you can prevent many, many injuries and falls in particular. So I find that very, very important. But as I get older, it's something I really don't want to lose. But I don't think you have to be a runner. I think you can simply go out and walk. I was listening to what you said, Ron, about the walking group, and I was listening to what you said, Gladys, about safety. And if a whole group of people are out walking together, there's usually safety in numbers. And the more you're out there, the less dangerous it is. That's what we found in Central Park a long, long time ago. The police said, you women shouldn't be out running in Central Park. And we said, no, we should be out running in Central Park. The more of us who are out running, the less dangerous it is. And that actually has proved to be the case.
Mm-hmm. Some listener comments. Joel writes to the program and said he thought that the race official who kind of harassed you in 1967 later became an ally.
Yes. You know, it's funny. First of all, forgiveness is a mighty thing. I forgave old Jock Semple for attacking me in the race. I realized he was just a product of his time, but it took him 5 years to come around to me. Finally, he had to welcome me officially in the Boston Marathon. And then we became best of friends. I think he saw the light of day. He saw that I was purposeful. I was serious, and I loved running. he was defending his beloved baby, which was the Boston Marathon, and he saw that I loved it too. And we became very, very good friends. We used to do things like this together, interviews. I helped him launch his book, and I was actually with him a few hours before he died. And people said, whoa, that is a lot of forgiveness. And they say, hey, you know, first of all, life's too short not to forgive. But the other thing is, how could you not love somebody who so completely changed your life, made a negative into an incredible positive, and therefore changed millions of women's lives?
Whether he intended to or not.
No, didn't matter. I had to love him just the same.
I find such beauty in that, because right now, we have these roiling public debates on all kinds of places, fronts, about ethnicities, race, socioeconomics. And sometimes we kind of draw these lines, and if someone transgresses, it's like there's going to be no forgiveness. You know, they must be cast out. And you showed how much an open door can mean to somebody.
Absolutely. And that's what 261 Fearless is all about, by the way. It's a non-judgmental community of women. It's not about competition. It's not about you live on the right side of the tracks. Any color, any race, any age is welcome with 261. That's what Baden Street's also all about. It's creating that non-judgmental, welcoming community.
If Jock Semple, right?
That was Jock Semple.
Yeah, so if he could have change the way he did. He is in the category of just about anybody can change, because this is a guy who ran onto the course and tried to pull Catherine Switzer off the marathon course. It took five years, right? Five years later? So what was it that changed him?
We campaigned to get women official in the race, and legislatively he had to change. We had the rules now on our side.
But if you have to change because someone says, well, the rules are changed, or some sort of a governing body says you must change, that's one thing. It's another for your heart to change.
Yes, but sometimes when legislation changes things, the heart will follow. Look at the women's right to vote. Look at Title IX education amendment has transformed sports in this country and education for women and opportunities and jobs. And people say, oh, women are okay after all. I mean, I've known men who wouldn't let their daughters participate in sports after Title IX. When he saw his daughters getting a four-year full-ride scholarship to a Big Ten university, he changed his heart. You know, legislation works.
One of our listeners wanted to know about what you eat.
I'm on a seafood diet. If I see food, I eat.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm serious. No, I don't eat junk. I mean, right now, we got to go to lunch after this, by the way. I'm really hungry. But yeah, I mean, look, you know, I change it up. You know, meat one day, fish one day, chicken. I'm not a vegetarian. Heavy up on the vegetables and a glass of milk every day.
That's it.
Well, you know, but meat and potatoes, but lots and lots of vegetables.
Have you changed,
and fruit.
Have you changed anything over the years with eating?
Yeah, I think probably it was a little heavy on the carbs before, and now I'm moving more into vegetables, but always some protein.
If you want to let listeners know about how they can work into distance running, because distance running it can be fun. Some people think they're going to hate running. I don't think you can hate running and run as much as you did. So I'm curious two things. Do you ever hate running? And if for people who want to become a distance runner and have to start slow, because you can't be running even a 5K or 10K overnight or a half marathon overnight, what would you tell them to do?
First of all, I've started hundreds, if not thousands, of people running who said, I hated it, I never thought I could do it, and now I can't believe I'm totally addicted to running because it's so transformational. Whether it's the endorphins or the oxygen over the brain synapses, I don't know, but it works. And it usually works for every person, especially every woman, every time. Having said that, it is not for everybody. So walk, dance. Anything that raises your spirit, swim, whatever you can do, ride a bike, it's movement that's important. But if somebody wants to be a distance runner, hey, take it slow. You know, the marathon is a long way. Do your local 5K first. Walk and jog it, and then try to jog the whole thing, and then work up to a 10K, and then work up from there. But take it slow, and get good shoes. Get them from a person who knows how to buy shoes.
Run.
I just want to, before we close,
yeah.
Time is getting close, but none of the things would happen at our senior center if it had not been for the efforts of Lois Robertson, who's the coordinator, and Lorna Coombs, who assists, and Lois. Those two ladies typify what we try to do with those seniors. they are the ones that generate the love, the camaraderie, the spiritness that happens at that senior center would not happen without those two ladies. And I just want to take this opportunity to thank them and ask them to keep doing what they're doing.
Absolutely.
That's really great.
And Ron, before we close, remind our listeners as we get ready to go what you want them to know about what's coming up tonight.
Well, tonight at 7 o'clock, Holiday Inn downtown, Baton's annual gala, benefiting the Mark Senior Center at Baton. Please come out and join us. All the proceeds from that event will support seniors to allow us to continue the things that Catherine, Gladys, and Ted have talked about in terms of our senior citizens. So we look forward to seeing you tonight.
A lot of great success stories. Ted is one of them here. You going to keep going, Ted, to the Mark Center?
Got to do it.
It's been great sharing your stories. And, Ted, thank you. Nice meeting you. And we'll see you out there at Baton Street. It's great meeting Ted Hardy. Ron Thomas, Executive Director. Thank you, Ron. Thanks for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Evan, for having us.
You got it. Gladys Jordan Holloman, I'll see you soon. You're wonderful, Gladys. Thank you so much for the work
thank
that you,
you
do. And Catherine Switzer, great having you. Have fun tonight. Welcome back to Rochester, and always great to talk to you.
Thank you, Evan.
I want to remind our listeners that this is the last day of our fall membership campaign. So before we go, I will do my part to tell you that you can make one phone call today to support your local member-supported public radio. When we say member-supported public radio, that's what we mean. It doesn't happen without members. We're not going to get to our goal today because you're going to wait for some person to call and fill the last gap of X tens of thousands of dollars. We need to do it with everybody pulling together, and I'd ask you to call 454-6300. 454-6300, or jump online, wxxinews.org, wxxinews.org, an easy way to give. It'll be 2 minutes or less. It's Friday. I know you're moving into your weekend. It's busy. Everyone's thinking about what they need to do over the weekend. Besides Ted. Ted does not want the weekends. Ted wants, Ted's the only person who's not looking forward to the weekends. He didn't get to go to Baton's Mark Center. But for all of you, I know it's busy. It'll take you 2 minutes or less, I promise. It'll be a great way to start your weekend, and we so appreciate it. Our thanks to John Andrus, the engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a lovely weekend. We're back with you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.